Good evening. I'm glad you're here. We're studying from John chapter 2, Life of Christ. Appreciate Jonathan last week covering class, finishing up the discussion about the first miracle, Jesus turning water to wine. Appreciate the enjoyable class. Enjoyed hearing the discussion last week. And then Jonathan began the section of John chapter 2, beginning in verse 13, which we're going to continue tonight about the, as it often portrays, the cleansing of the temple. I think we know what that means in terms of Jesus and his attempt to remove from the temple that which should not have been there. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the reaction of Jesus to those things, what it is that caused that. All right, John chapter 2, verses 13 through 21, to again set the context. I always like to read the text itself and make sure that that's in our minds as we discuss these things to get somebody to read. We get verse 13 through 21. Bruce, go ahead. Thank you.
The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And he found the temple those who were selling oxen, sheep, doves, and money changers seated at the tables. And they scourged the cords and drew them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And to those who were selling the doves, he said, "Keep these things away. Stop making my father's house a place of business." As the disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal of your house will consume you." And the Jews, and they said to him, "What say do you show us as the authority of doing these things?" And Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple in 3 days, and I will raise it up." And the Jews did say, "It took 46 years to build the temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was not speaking of the temple of his body. So when they rose from the dead, the disciples remembered that he said this, and they believed the scriptures and word of Jesus as spoken.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. So appreciated Jonathan getting this section of the text started. Talks about the fact that the Passover of the Jews was near. Jesus went up to Jerusalem as a Jew would do for the Passover. We see a total of 4 references during the life of Christ to the Passover, to the feast, which again kind of gives us an overall framework as it would be for the life of Christ. We see here at the beginning of his ministry 1, and then we see 3 more after that, and what the last one being just before his death. And approximately how long would his ministry have been? About 3 years. So we see again that kind of puts some bookmarks, as it were, on his ministry and the time that he was with his apostles and taught amongst the people. We see the scene. What was the scene then at Jerusalem during the Passover? I'm sorry?
Business,
but again, I mean, in terms of the volume, huge crowds. Again, people came to the Passover from where?
Everywhere.
From all over the known world. And you go to, you know, what passage kind of talks about all the nations of people that would be at the Passover? Acts chapter 2, yeah, it talks about all the nations of people that would be there. And so again, anybody who's ever been in, you know, a city where there was a huge convention, you know, again, I kind of, that idea in terms of Jerusalem at the time of the Passover, huge numbers of people, and not only huge numbers of people, but for every Jew that was there, what was needed to be there for the large number of Jews who gathered for the Passover? A large number of sacrifices. And again, can you imagine how many of them, again, animals would need to be there? If you had, again, hundreds of thousands of Jews gathering, you know, there for the Passover, how many, again, sacrificial animals? It's going to be a long night. Animals. would need to be there. And again, we see the scene, and again, if you're a Jew at that time, you would need, you know, those animals for your sacrifices. But part of that scene, and again, Jonathan went into this last week, part of that scene, and Randy, you mentioned that, was it was not just a religious environment that was there. The environment was business. And we'll get there, and sometimes, you know, when I make my notes, because there's something we're going to talk about, what this idea of business and what that really means. But, you know, the scene in the temple, there were merchants selling oxen, sheep, and doves. So you had, again, these merchants, and we'll get there. I think one of the graphics you used, Jonathan, was one I also had. I think that's one of them they used, and I had it also. In terms of the scene of the temple, Jonathan talked about the court of the Gentiles, where the selling of the oxen and the doves and the sheep would have taken place. I believe I read somewhere where oftentimes the part of the court of the Gentiles where that would take place was in the porticos around the outside, where they would actually set up the, as it were, the booths, I don't know, I guess in my mind I picture something like a swap meet where they would have, as it were, the little tables or stands, and each one would be set up there. But you go into there, and this court of the Gentiles then would be full of merchants, people selling the oxen, the sheep, and the doves. And then if people were coming from all over the known world at that time, from all the nations under heaven, to Passover, did they all have the same currency? No. And so again, what was out? What else was found there at the same money changers? And again, do we know exactly what the scene of these money changers? You know what their setup was? I don't know, but we know that they were there. There were money changers there. Anybody ever been to a Western Union today? You know, or a place like that. I don't know that I've been in one. But again, you know, somewhere like Western Union, they're in the business of doing what? Money exchanging. I mean, and if you've ever been to, if you've ever known anybody that's been to a Western Union or just some type of check cashing place, do they do it just out of the charity of their heart? Anybody ever notice the fees that they're in it for business. What were these money changers there for? Just the courtesy to offer these Jews? No. To make money. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So that's the scene. And Jesus, and again, what we've read already in the study of the life of Christ of one other time that Jesus came to his Father's house. And what... Somebody described that scene that we already studied when Jesus came to his Father's house.
When he was 12.
Yes. And what was he doing?
He was teaching in the temple.
Okay. And then when his parents finally found him, he told his parents, "I had to be about my Father's business or in my Father's house doing his work." And we talked about how that even at that young age, he understood what his Father's house was all about. To him, even at age 12, Jesus understood, my Father's house is a house of prayer, it's a house of study, it's a house of worship. We now see him back at his Father's house, and he comes in to see study, worship, prayer. What he sees initially is a marketplace. It's the world has come in. They're doing business. Jonathan?
It kind of adds the impression to me from the time in Fort Worth. They still, kind of as a show, bring the cattle down the old exchange road that's now one of their big business centers. But from the olden days, it used to be the cattle drive that went through town and loaded them up and pins just outside of the railroad tracks, and they would buy and trade the cattle right there on the street side, and
And again, what should they have been going to the temple to do?
Pray.
To pray, to worship, to fulfill God's law in terms of remembering the Passover. Was the Passover to be a solemn occasion? And I I'm not trying to read too much into this, but when I read about those selling oxen and sheep and doves, I picture that there's more than one. You know, that there's competing, you know, as it were, interests to sell the oxen, the sheep, and the doves. And I can imagine that, do you think they were trying to be quiet about it, trying to be subdued, trying to be low-key? And I can just picture, again, the scene of, you know, get your sheep here. And again, the selling and the advertising, the merchandising of the situation. And can you imagine trying to go to offer worship and praise and prayer to God when all around you is, get your sheep here, let me change your money here, and so forth. And then trying to go in and offer your prayers unto God. To remember the Passover, to remember God's deliverance. We talk about preparing our hearts and minds to worship God today. And could you imagine if you were asked to come into this assembly to worship God and to pray to Him, to meditate on His scriptures and to think about the Lord's death? While we had vendors outside here in the lobby and in the parking lot, selling and trying to get your business and do things like that, and you have to walk through that to come in here to a solemn assembly, how easy would that be? Bruce?
You know, when you think about it, even going in, there was probably a fee, even going in, even sell, but everything is so disordered. There's no way that you can worship.
Absolutely. And so we see again that this is a map of the city of Jerusalem. And again, we're seeing just this portion of it. And no doubt as he came into the city, you would have seen again the masses of people. And already the throngs as we're going. But again, it is in here where all this merchandising is taking place. Now, again, did those who come from all the nations of the earth to offer Passover, did they need sacrifices? Were there other places to do it? Were there other ways to obtain the sacrifices that they needed? Yeah. And so, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, there are some very practical lessons for us today. And we'll talk about those as we go forward. But again, it's important for us to, again, understand the scene, understand what those at that time and what Jesus' reaction was all about. Randy?
I'm trying to get a deeper understanding, too. The buying and selling of the animals for sacrifice and money changing, that was all necessary, wasn't it? It just needed to be done outside the temple. So isn't that what Jesus was upset because they were doing that inside the temple?
Well, again, what did he say?
Making my father's house a place of business.
Right. He said, verse 16, take these things away. Away from where? Away from my father's house. Did he take them away from Jerusalem? Take them away altogether? No, I believe he's talking about taking them away from here. And then he talked about making my father's house of merchandise. Chris? Today, again, we could turn God's house into a house of merchandise. But to Chris's point, you know, when do we prepare ourselves to worship God? Before, you know, when we walk through the door? Before you come. And Chris's point is about making preparations. You know, do we prepare? Does it begin when we get up in the morning? Does to begin the night before.
Yes.
In terms of making sure that we're rested and ready to go. In terms of, again, what we're going to offer to the Lord. Again, do we wait until the last minute? Or, again, as I like to note, when it talks about giving upon the first day of the week, that Paul said, as you have purpose in your heart. And if you look at that word purpose, it has to do with planning and preparation. It doesn't mean what you just happen to have at the moment. Now, to the point of, did everybody, all the Jews at that time, did all of them have their own sheets and lambs, necessarily? No, but to your point, you know, when do you make preparations for that? At the last minute? Or do we prepare ahead of that, Chris?
Is there another verse or another version that says set aside? It's not what's left over. It's what at the beginning you set aside and save before.
Absolutely, lay aside as we've been prospered, to set aside, absolutely, as we have purposed in our hearts. I think that's an excellent point in terms of, again, you know, if you're just, okay, we're here for the Passover, you got to give me a sheep somewhere, and let me get the best price, they've got 2-for-1 over here. I don't mean to be flippant about that, but again, if you're, you know, could people have been that casual about it, or just... I got to get me a lamb. And you remember, there's a Malachi that talked about, again, a very casual attitude about sacrifice. If you go back to Malachi chapter 1, if I get somebody to read verses 6 through 10, Malachi 1, 6 through 10. Randy?
Malachi 1, 6 through 10. The son honors his father, and a servant his master. Then if I am a father, where's my honor? And if I am a master, where's my respect? Says the Lord of hosts to you, O priests who despise my name. But you say, how have we despised your name? You are presenting defiled food on my altar. But you say, how have we defiled you? In that you say, the table of the Lord is to be despised. But when you present the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? When you present the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Why not offer to your governor? Would he be pleased with you? Or would he receive you kindly? Says the Lord of hosts. But now will you not entreat God's favor, that he may be gracious to us? With such an offering on your part, will he receive you? Will he receive any of you kindly? Says the Lord of hosts. Oh, that there were one among you who shut the gates, that you might not uselessly kindle fire on my altar. I am not pleased with you, says the Lord of hosts, nor will I accept an offering from you.
So those who did not have a sheep, but needed to buy one to offer as a sacrifice, what type of lamb or sheep had that sheep needed to be? A lamb without blemish. Let's put it at least this way. Would there have been a temptation, at least, if you waited until the last minute to go into the court of the Gentiles and say, I need a sheep, to simply take a casual approach about what sheep it is? It's like, I don't know, any of them will do. Could that be a temptation, at least, on the part of those who wait till the last minute and say, I'll take any of them? It doesn't really matter. No one then, Darrell?
Well, the same how it kind of ties together to the Lord's Supper, how it does a little sooner.
Oh, absolutely. And again, what were the Pharisees especially known for in terms of their worship to God? Were they concerned in terms of the heart? But their preparations were what? Inward or outward? Yeah, they were very much outward preparations in terms of preparing the heart to worship God. You're right, there wasn't a lot of emphasis there. But in terms of this passage in Malachi, you see how, again, there were many at that day, there were 400 plus years before Christ came, whose approach towards the sacrifice to God was, again, a lack of preparation. It's whatever's left over. I didn't need this sheep anyway, so I will offer that one. Not a lot of care and concern.
The text of Malachi is just a little bit further down, even with what they were doing in the passage that was read. Their attitude was, oh, what a weird thing. I've got to find something. I just got to find something.
Right. But can you see that happening here at the time? I got to find the lamb. That was good enough. You know, that's fine with me. Yeah. Why, how wearisome it is.
you know, just a burden. And again, what did Malachi say there in verse 10 in terms of God's attitude towards worship, that people didn't prepare their hearts and minds to offer the best of the Lord? How did God feel about that?
Just use somebody's lock the door.
He said, just shut the gates. Don't even come in. And in fact, you see here, Jesus kind of doing that, as it were. Isn't it? Just get out. And he, in the aspect of driving them out, if that's your worship, if that's what you're bringing to me, shut the gate, I don't want it. I don't want that approach. Darren?
Yeah, so, if you could elaborate a little bit on this, okay, when you forsake and when you offer the blind and sacrifice, is it evil, lame, sick? So, is what he's saying here, he's giving us. It's kind of difficult to say, well, you're blind, so you're not worthy of the grocer or the government. Is that what he's saying?
He's saying that when they brought their sacrifices to God, they looked out amongst their flock and said, now I've got 100 really good sheep.
Okay.
They're beautiful. I've got this sheep over here. It's blind. It has a hobbled leg. It's not a lamb without blemish. I couldn't get anything for that lamb anyway.
Is that what you're saying, then, that the blind is an animal?
Yes.
Oh, see, I was thinking, you know, the blind.
No.
It would be a person thing. How are you
relating
that to being less worthy than the governor?
This is their sacrifice.
Gotcha.
They're offering the leftovers.
Gotcha.
And again, when we worship God, bring it to us here, can we offer our leftovers to God? We should, but can we? Is it possible for us to offer our leftovers to God?
Yeah. We can offer it, but he won't.
Right, well, exactly. Leftovers to God in terms of what? In other words, it's not the leftovers of our flock, but the leftovers of what?
Time.
I think that's a huge one. God said, our leftover time. You know, if I don't have anything else to do with my time, I'll go to worship God. You know, if I get around to it, what else? Leftover of my blessings. Again, I had a gentleman when I was senior in college, member of the church, knowing I was about to graduate and begin to, again, earn a living and so forth. And he said to me, Chris, I'm not telling you about what you need to give. But he says, when you start having a regular amount of income, and you start dealing with the things that you need to spend in life, and your rent, and your food, and things like that. And he actually got out a piece of paper and said, income. And he goes, in terms of what you give to God, and he had all these things listed, where did he put in terms of what I give to God in the list?
Yes, in our priorities, that's our church. The church should be our first priority.
Yes.
And we don't take, you know, we don't take from him, we take what we give to him, we take it off the top.
Well, right. And again, we'll talk more about this. In the Old Testament, there was called a law of first fruits. It was under the old law, if they had a wheat field, and they were to give a certain percentage of their harvest to the Lord. What portion of the harvest was to go to the Lord?
The first
of what you reaped of your flock, of your herds. If you have an apple grove, you gave the first of your apples to the Lord. And the idea that this gentleman had when he wanted to get this point across was, in terms of, again, not only your time, but of your blessings, when you come to think about that, you take care of that first. You decide, he says, I'm not telling you what that is, but whatever you decide, you figure that out first. And then everything flows down from there. And if we did the same thing with our time, in terms of, again, I'm going to carve out my life and my time, and I'm going to figure out of my time what I need to give to the Lord, and then everything else goes from there. And the other thing, in terms of probably even more importantly, as you look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul commended the brethren of Macedonia, thank you. Because they gave not only according to their ability, but they gave
of themselves.
You're stealing the punchline here. They gave beyond themselves. But as Richard just pointed out, what preceded giving beyond what they could do was, as Richard said, they first gave themselves to the Lord. And when we talk about giving ourselves to the Lord, what part is that? I would say, again, it's first of all, it's our heart. It's our heart, our soul, our mind. I mean, it's all of them. But they first gave themselves to the Lord. And Bruce, again, I know you had to end up a moment ago. Sorry.
No, when you go back and you look at numbers and things and all that, you know, when they gave, it was not only was it just dedicated, but it was the best that they had.
Right.
And I can, for some reason, I can't see, you know, if you're a Jew, you come from a long way. You already have it all. And then when you get there, that's what you get. So they were prepared before they got the phone.
Right. So, well, I'm going to pick on Mick here for a second. Because I know this is something that it's important to Mickey, and I know it's important to all of us. When you're going to be away traveling, when do you make preparations for your worship?
Not before you leave.
Before
you leave.
Again, the whole point for those who, again,
you plan around.
Right, if you're going to go. I'm sorry?
You plan around before you're going to worship.
Right, and what you're going to need to be, you know, what you're going to need to have with you. And again, for those that were coming to Jerusalem for Passover, again, like the Ethiopian and others, I mean, some came a long distance, and that's admirable. They have what they mean, but you make preparations. And again, Chris, I appreciate you bringing this whole line of discussion up, because I think that's a key to this. It's absolutely essential. Bruce?
And the perfect example is the Ethiopian eunuch.
Yes, absolutely right. In terms of, again, how far they come. But as you come, again, make preparations. And again, that is so important. So again, we get the scene. And the Apostle Paul, by inspiration, said what two characteristics are to govern our worship unto God. That all our worship is to be done spirit and truth, but also in 1 Corinthians, he talked about, as he's dealing with the spiritual gifts, there was a need to control the use of the spiritual gifts in worship because things need to be done decently and in order. Any decency and orderliness to what Jesus would have walked into here?
Chaos. Yeah, I mean, it's a three-ring circus here. So, and again, just one other, well, that didn't come through too good. I'll get rid of that one. So, Jesus comes in, we talked about the scene. What did Jesus do? He made a scourge of cords.
Now, the scourging had a meaning, you know, in terms of being scourged. Regarding the rope having pieces of bone or metal necessarily attached. I don't know that as I read of this in terms of this scourge of cords, this is not necessarily something with bones and metal used for a scourging. But no doubt, those who had brought the oxen and the sheep into the court of the Gentiles to sell, would there have been ropes or cords necessarily available that Jesus could have then simply used and entwined them together to make, as it were, a whip or a scourge of ropes or cords together. And so we see here that he made a scourge of cords and he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen. So not only did he drive out the people selling them, Jonathan, you're talking about a cattle drive, he's getting rid of the animals too. He's driving them out. He is clearing the temple of those who were engaged in the merchandise. And not only then did he take that scourge of cords and ropes and, as it were, forcefully drive out those who were doing this merchandising outside in the court of the Gentiles. The second point is, those who were there for gain in terms of exchanging the money, he did what?
Turned over the table.
Poured them out, turned them over. I can't imagine it was a matter of just, you know, the forcefulness of which. And that's perhaps one of the things, as you have seen, because do we know what Jesus looked like? We don't. How is he often portrayed? I'm sorry?
He's full of joy.
Very, very slight, you know, almost a cowering, someone who, not a lot of, I don't know how to describe it, but I take offense almost at necessary, I take offense at trying to portray what the Son of God looked like because we don't know. But for someone to have done this, to have gone into the court of the Gentiles with all of these merchants selling oxen and sheep and doves and these money changers, and to take a scourge of cords and to drive them all out, and to turn over the money changers, tables. What kind of man was Jesus? He was a zealous man. It didn't matter how big he was. What was the issue? His physical size? What was at work here? His passion. His zeal for God. His enthusiasm for what is right and what is wrong. And it didn't matter if he was 5'5" and 150 pounds or 6'3". The fact is that because of his passion, his zeal for the Lord, he drove them out. And then, what is it that he said? We've talked about this already. Take these things away. Stop making my Father's house a place of business. Stop making my Father's house a place of business. Again, in Luke chapter 2 and verse 49, as we had referenced before, Luke chapter 2 and verse 49 is where we have mentioned of Jesus talking about his Father's house. Did you not know I had to be in my Father's house, or about my Father's business, doing his work? His Father's house and what that house meant and what it was for, the purpose of that house and why people should have been gathering there. Jesus was passionate about that. He was zealous in defending what the purpose of coming together was for. And he was going to make sure that at this point in time that that was known. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 6, but Christ was faithful as a son over his house, whose house we are, if we hold fast our confidence and boast of our hope firm until the end. Again, this was his Father's house. And he was passionate about that. So we talked about the fact that stop making my Father's house a place of business. That's interesting. That word business, or other translations use the word house of merchandise, comes from the Greek word emporion. And where's the English word we get from that?
Emporium.
Emporium. In fact, when I was a kid growing up in Salem, one of the few clothing stores, there was one called the Emporium. And it simply means a place to merchandise, to sell things. It's a store. Again, this was to be a place of worship, and you have made it a place of business, a store. And again, as I have up there on the board, a store for the purpose of making profit. These were not charitable organizations here who are simply, again, you know, some non-profit organization trying to do good. And again, that wouldn't have mattered if it was a non-profit, but they were there for the purpose of making a profit. It was about business, about making money. Why as a businessman, would you want to set up shop in the court of the Gentiles?
You have a kind of captive audience there.
Yeah. You have a captive audience. That's a good business model, isn't it? From a business point of view, is that pretty good to sell, to have a store as close as you can? You know, you ever go out to Wrightwood? you know, and in the winter when they got skiing up there, to be right there at the top of the mountain, be the last place before you get there selling skis or anything else like that. Be the last one selling, you know, snowshoes or men's whatever like that. Be close to where the action is. Why were they set up in the court of the Gentiles?
It was the last chance campaign.
And I read something where these merchandisers were there for the convenience of the people coming from Passover. It wasn't for their convenience. I'm cynical. It was for their profit. It was because that was a way to make money.
Obviously working.
I'm sorry?
It was obviously working.
Oh, yeah. And I can imagine in terms of, you know, even as big as that court of the Gentiles was, that portico, that there was limited amount of space. Do you think they were eager to get the prime locations within that court of the Gentiles? Again, there were, you know, I'm going to be here and not here. Again, thinking about worshiping God, thinking about the Passover and God's deliverance. Randy?
This was an ordinary thing, though, was it? The other gospel accounts are different accounts, that way. Matthew, Mark, Luke accounts, because they happen later on.
Absolutely. That's the next point. Matthew, Mark, and Luke record a similar event.
Yeah.
Okay, and we have the passages up there. It's a different time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like a yearly thing. It doesn't mention it in Luke when he's 12, but it sounds like it's a yearly event. They set up camp. All merchants come into town, and you can help rake in the dough.
Right. Right. No, I believe it was a different account in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and even what is said by Jesus is a little bit different. So it's a different situation. But does somebody have their hands over here, Chris?
Well, I was trying to have the same question as Keith. So we know that it happened, you had to offer a sacrifice once a year. I mean, was it feasible for every Jew to offer at the same time, or did you offer during your birthday month?
Well, again, these were Passover sacrifices, and again, there were other sacrifices required by the old law. As to whether everybody who came offered sacrifices for each of them, I don't know. And as to whether any of the other feasts or festivals, when that sacrifice were offered, did they set up shop there then also? I don't know. But is there any expectation that the Jews, based on all we know and their reaction to Jesus and what he taught, is there any expectation that this one incident would have taught them their lessons they would have responded to for the rest of their lives? Anybody ever see where the circumstances where someone today, maybe there was like an illegal operation somewhere, you know, selling something they shouldn't be. The police come in and, can't be doing that here. And they shut it down. You ever see something like that happen? And then as soon as the authorities are gone, what happens? They come right back. I don't know. Again, I'm convinced that perhaps 3 years later, Jesus again, towards the end of his ministry, faces the same thing. I don't know how quickly, but I would dare say that as soon as Jesus wasn't there, again, if it was a matter of profit or money, they'd have been back. Jonathan.
That's the point that I was really trying to get to last week, and I didn't finish up with it, but when you see their response to Jesus driving out all of this business, maybe, what did the chief priests and the leaders of the temple come and ask you? By what authority do you do these things? Show us a sign as to why you think you can come in and change things like this, when it was their responsibility to have had that in order and not in the temple to begin with.
Yeah, what's your authority?
Right. And their response was, well, why are you coming in to do it rather than shame on us? We should have done that before. That's why you see it 3 years later. They're still allowing the same behavior in the temple.
What do we see in the book of Acts regarding those who lost profit? when Paul or others, as it were, Demetrius the silversmith and others, when the gospel shut down their business, as it were, what was the reaction?
They didn't like
that. You know, again, people like their money, they like their profit. And again, I don't know if it was the next Passover, the next opportunity, and I can just imagine at the next Passover, they're like, somebody watch out for Jesus, you know. If you see him coming, let us know. But we do know that, again, by the end of his ministry, they were back. And again, their profit was more important to them than their worship unto God. So, we've talked a lot about this, but again, in terms of it's a powerful lesson. But what are we to learn from this? What are our takeaways today? Again, Chris, I'm going to add this one. It's about preparation. And again, when do we prepare? And how do we prepare in terms of coming to worship God in front of a time frame? What else? What are we to learn from this? No?
You should be excited to be willing. I feel like if you're excited to do something, you'll naturally want to be prepared and ready for it.
Okay. Then it should be a joy to come out to worship God. If it's something that's truly a joy, again, something that is pleasurable to you that you really look forward to, when you get ready for it in advance. What else? What are the other lessons to learn here? Those one.
One of the things that I've like already noticed is that I think this also explains the slippery slope. It's conjecture, but it's what I think. Some of this probably started out as legit reasoning or legit purposes, like the money changers. Like they didn't really want Caesar's any money that had Caesar's image on it to be used inside the temple, so they had some kind of reason to actually do this, or, you know, there was sacrifices outside, and so it just became one of those things where you see that now, like, somebody sits there and says, well, why can't we have a place that, you know, people can gather and eat food after services? Oh, well, great, we'll charge money to make money off of that, so we can get bigger and better. So it becomes that kind of a thing where if you don't focus on what this is truly for, and you start saying, oh, well, that's okay, that's not too bad, and a slope that you quickly move. So I could sit there and say that I think that probably is what happened.
I think that's an excellent point in terms of you know, when this all began, I could see, you know, maybe somebody, you know, setting up outside, you know, the court of the Gentiles and, you know, respecting. And then finally somebody said, you know, if I'm on this side of the wall, what's the difference if I'm on this side of the wall or that side of the wall? Just moving in a little bit in terms of, again, just... And Juan's point is an excellent point. How does error and false worship get introduced in one fell swoop? Again, steps are made. But again, we were outside the court. You know, what's the difference on this side of the wall or that side of the wall? And yeah, just that we have noble intentions. Again, we're just trying to serve the Jews. Again, and how many doctrinal errors and false worship is justified with noble intentions? Richie?
Reverence, purpose, I think is one point. Primarily, and I think one of the greatest illustrations, someone mentioned earlier the observance of the Lord's Supper. We've had proponents today who believe that 1 Corinthians 11 describes some kind of a festive occasion at the conclusion of which they observed the Lord's Supper. And the Apostle Paul said, it's not possible for you to observe the Lord's Supper. When you're coming together, each one has his own supper.
Yeah, you almost picture something similar to this, don't you?
Yes, well, it's me or the Lord.
You just have to have all these...
The focus gets messed up.
Yeah. Yeah, great point. Bruce, and then Randy, and then Richard.
You know, when you think about Ephesians and also Colossians, you know, where, you know, we said, you know, that the word Christ dwells in the region. But then that we do everything, you know, the songs, and, but it's from the heart. And if we don't have, if our heart is not right, then we're not going to worship God right at all.
Right. You got to start in the heart. Right.
I think it's an interesting conversation that he has with the Jews in verse 18. The Jews then said to him, "What sign do you show us as your authority for doing these things?" Similar to Matthew 21 when they asked him about that. He asked about the baptism of John. In this case, he doesn't give them the answer that they want. He says, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it up." They did destroy his temple, and in 3 days he did raise it up. So that exact thing happened, but the fact that they asked him, "What authority are you doing these things?" that lets you know that they were the authority for why they were happening to begin with. In order to get inside the court of the Gentiles, I mean, you're inside the wall of the temple, right? So wouldn't you have to have permission? I would think. Permission from these chief priests.
And hopefully, Matthew chapter 21, again, to answer that question, by whose authority do you do these things? Jesus said the two sources of authority are
from heaven
or from men. So he was either doing it from his own, or again, whose house was that? His father's house. And who, by whose authority was he doing these things? By his father. Richard, and then Mickey, and then...
I was just going to comment that this is not the first time they had a problem like this. I mean, when they came back from Babylonian captivity, Ezra and Nehemiah had to put their foot down and say, "No, you will not come in to the side of the city on the Sabbath day to sell your wares." And they had to stand guard at the gate until the people finally dispersed from outside the city.
Well, that's a good example, yeah. Mickey and then Darrell?
The facetious wasn't the temple, and the temple court wasn't it just brick and stone? I mean, what difference did it make what they did in?
Well, that's, again, that's an excellent point in terms of, again, Jesus talking about is, you know, that they swear by the gold of the temple or, you know, so forth. It's not that it was special wood or stone or brick or whatever like that. It's the purpose. It's what that place and purpose, what the purpose of the place is all about. So, again, you know, and one of the, my quick 3 points. One, the large church today, is it to be a house of merchandise? And have people made it so? Number two, from 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 16, and again, if we can get brethren to agree upon this, let not the church be burdened. Again, there are things that the church is to do and the things that the church is not to do. And when we ask the church to do things like become a house of merchandise, we're burdening the church.